The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Now, we'd like to thank Nolitha for joining us all the way from Johannesburg, South Africa. For those curious, it's 8 p.m. there now. And as we're transitioning from the winter to the spring here in California and South Africa, they're going from summer to the fall. So it's a good time for kind of a good transition period for everyone. So Nolitha Sengiwe is a guiding teacher at the Dharmagiri Retreat Center in KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa. She will be completing a four-year teacher training under IMS and IRC in May of this year. Nolitha is a student of Kitasaro and Tanisara, who are students of Ajahn Chah. Growing up in a culture underpinned by the principle of Ubuntu, which means I am because we are, and where the power of generosity is greatly appreciated. And being introduced to Buddhism and living in a place where there aren't many Buddhists felt like coming home for her. Nolitha is also a single parent to a 23-year-old son in a culture where villages help to raise their children. So thank you very much for joining us, Nolitha.
Thank you, Kevin. I'm delighted to be here. So the theme I've chosen for our reflection is generosity. So under the theme of generosity, I'm going to talk about giving, sharing, a key practice in Buddhism, in all Buddhist traditions, called dana. That's the Pali word for giving. I'll also talk about training in ethics. Buddha referred to training in precepts as the great dana. It's another form of giving. I'll also speak about relinquishment, letting go. Pali word for relinquishment is kaga. Letting go is also a form of giving. And lastly, I will talk about forgiveness. Forgiveness is a form of giving where we give each other fearlessness when we forgive. So the cultivation of generosity is really the foundation for our training of the mind. It is the foundation for mindfulness and wisdom for liberation. So I notice the words I'm using, giving and sharing, precepts, relinquishment, forgiveness. These words can bring up interesting experiences in the heart. Can bring up discomfort. I know for a long time for me, the words precepts and relinquishment would bring a sense of terror to my heart. To know how it is like for you, these words. Maybe you're well ahead in this path. These words bring joy to your heart. That's what they are aimed for, actually, to bring joy. So I'm going to start off with a story that for me highlights the beauty and the grace of generosity. A friend of mine I teach with here in South Africa, Moira, shares a story about being in Zambia. Zambia and South Africa share a border. So she says, here she is in some village in Zambia, driving on a dirt road. The car starts to give her problems. She drives on and suddenly notices that there's this homestead near the roadside, and there are kind of scrap cars, old cars in the yard. And she decides to stop here, thinking this would be the kind of place that can give her help in fixing her car. At the homestead, she's welcomed by an old man. She notices children playing in the sand and also notices signs of great poverty in this household. She mentions seeing a few chickens without any feathers. So she explains her need, and the old man organizes older boys. They look at the car, car is fixed. And then about to leave, Moira offers this old man some money. He says no. He then offers some fruits in the car. He says no. And she says, but it's for the children. He says no. And then he says, if we can't help each other, that would be really sad if we just cannot just give help. For Moira, this was a new experience. And receiving this experience, Moira is a white person, old man is black, and I'm mentioning the race here because I'm joining you from South Africa. And issues of race are still a big issue. Moira shares that from this experience, she felt deeply connected. And she also mentions that she felt like she didn't deserve that connection. So acts of generosity allows for these benevolent connections with each other. Generosity, acts of kindness, giving, sharing. This is what the Buddha has to say about sharing. If beings knew, as I know, the results of giving and sharing, they would not eat without having given. Nor would the stain of selfishness overcome their minds. Even if it were their last bite, their last mouthful, they would not eat without having shared if there were someone to receive their gift. So when growing up, practice of generosity was truly a way of life. I remember that growing up in a more rural countryside part of South Africa, always there would be an extra plate of food set aside in case there's a visitor or someone passing by who can be offered a meal. I also remember that there was no time that we ever were a nuclear family only. Our home was always a home to many. Cousins, aunts, uncles. Sometimes I wouldn't even know how we are related to that person who was there to share our home for as much time as she needed or he needed to be there. My parents were doing what their own parents did. So I do know a lot about this kind of giving. I must admit, though, moving to the city, getting urbanized, there's less and less of this kind of generosity. So I know generosity personally, but I also know generosity at a country level. The world often wonders, how did South Africa manage a bloodless transition from apartheid South Africa to a black-led government? Many think it was because of Nelson Mandela. Rightly so, he did play a critical role in what the world thought of as the miracle, a miracle that gave hope to the whole world. To us, it wasn't a miracle. To us, this was so because the African culture is underpinned by the principle of Ubuntu. I am because we are. If I cause you harm, I'm causing harm to myself. Steve Biko, who was the leader of Black Consciousness Movement, a hero, a struggle hero who died in the hands of apartheid South Africa, is speaking to this principle when he says, our contribution to the world would not be in technology. Our contribution as Africa to the world will be to give the world a humane face. The face of humanness. So to be fully human is about being generous, giving, sharing, and forgiving. So as a country, I also noticed that we're really great at coming together at times of crisis. And this has been the case during this crisis of COVID-19. I have a few stories to share with you about these acts of kindness shown by people, not only here, but really everywhere. This is what people have done. They've remembered what it is to be fully human by giving support in any way that they can. We know medical care and related professions would even risk their lives to save lives. So I have a friend who's an academic. So she had a task of collating these stories, local stories of kindness during this period of COVID. And she's actually in the process of compiling a book titled Archives of Kindness. So I am going to read to you two of these stories. Actually, what she did was to ask a number of us to choose your five top stories. So this is the two of the five that I'm going to read to you. Candace in Cape Town, in Franschhoek, writes, I've been living in Franschhoek now for 12 years. We are a small village, but as with most places in South Africa, we have a polarized society of the wealthy and the poor, some of whom live in a township setting. For a small village, we also have a hugely successful and vibrant hospitality sector, which means we have many hardworking people in all levels of an industry that were some of the hardest hit during this lockdown. Over the years, I've been amazed at how many people have done extraordinary things in their private capacity because it's the right thing to do, like building schools and sports centers for poorer communities. But during this crisis, we reached a whole new level. So many people contributed and did awesome things, coordinating relief, turning restaurants into food kitchens, checking it up that everyone was okay in all different parts of the town. A lady from the township Diepkloof here in Johannesburg writes, my landlady is an angel. She has given us a free stay for 2 months, all 5 of her tenants. She's unemployed and depends on her rent, but she's seen how we're all struggling in the yard. She says we will share whatever food we find. She's now trying to find someone to donate nappies for my son. I'm embarrassed. She's an old lady. During this time, she has the strength I'm lacking. She is my hero and a mom to all of us. May God give me strength to pay it forward one day. These are joyful stories. This is what happens to the heart when there is generosity. So the Buddha, in teaching, when teaching to new people to the practice, he would always or mostly start off by teaching about generosity. He would then proceed and teach about precepts. Only then, when he has the sense that these teachings of generosity and training in ethics have landed, will he then introduce meditation. Ajahn Chah, teacher of my teachers, the Thai forest master, on this theme says, with virtue as a basis for everything you do, your mind will become kind, clear, and quiet. Meditation will grow easily in this environment. So through the practice of generosity, virtue, we can recover the connection with ourselves, with each other, and with Mother Nature. Through generosity, we recover the heart's potential for sensitivity, the heart's potential for opening. Baba Mandaza, who lives in Zimbabwe, also Zimbabwe shares a border with South Africa. Baba is known as an international peacemaker. He is a guardian to our center here, founded by Kitsaran Tamisara Damagiri. When they speak about Baba, Kitsaran Tamisara talk of him as a contemporary of Ajahn Chah. Baba says, we have been disconnected to ourselves, disconnected from each other because we are disconnected from nature. And because we're disconnected from nature, we take whatever we want from nature without giving back. As the world, we are in an ecological crisis because we do not see ourselves as part of nature. We abuse nature for our greed, and our greed is endless. Through this, we lose this heart sensitivity, the intuitive intelligence. It is said that we are the only species that destroys its own habitat. We've lost connection with the goodness of the heart. And I think we're paying a price for this. Disconnected from each other, disconnected from ourselves, we feel separate. We create us and them. In Martin Buber's language, we create I-it relationships. It is through the cultivation of these practices of generosity that we can recover what Martin Buber calls the I and thou relationship, the I and we relationship. With the we identity, we can remember the truth that we all suffer and we all want happiness. Our sense of conscience and concern can be reawakened. I'm going to talk about generosity as relinquishment. Relinquishment is a form of letting go. In letting go, we let go of greed, craving, which the Buddha has identified as the cause of our suffering. The second noble truth, that we suffer because of craving. And the task in this path of freedom for liberation is to let go of the craving. As practices of giving can support us, help us to let go. Craving has no end. It feeds itself. It is through understanding, it is through these practices that we can release craving. What underpins craving is ignorance, confusion. See how we can look or what is this heart's longing in wrong places. When we follow sense objects to satisfy our craving, that has no end. Desire feeds itself. We look for fulfillment in sense experience. Sense experience changes. What is pleasant becomes unpleasant. There's a story I delight at in Buddhism about this confusion of looking for fulfillment in the wrong places. It's the story of Nasruddin. Nasruddin is a Sufi mystic. He's sitting outside in Arabian spice shop and is eating these hot chilies. his eyes are watering. A friend comes by and says, "What are you doing? Eating these hot chillies with your eyes watering and you're sweating." Nasruddin says, "I'm looking for the sweet one." This is what we do, you and I, right? We look for the freedom, which is the longing of the heart. Heart longs for freedom, freedom from greed, hatred, and delusion. Lastly, I'm going to talk about forgiveness as a form of giving. How is forgiveness a form of giving? When we forgive, we give fearlessness. When people know that we hold no grudges, we hold no ill will when we have been their victims, it gives relief, it gives happiness. I know personally about this kind of relief that comes from one who I have harmed holds no ill will towards him. I can't remember what year it was, but it was the year that Nelson Mandela died. I'm not sure whether that was 2011. I leave home and I notice a feeling of anxiety. And between leaving home and maybe it can't have been even 10 minutes after I left home, my phone rings, I'm driving and I answer the phone. Within no time, between that moment of answering the phone whilst driving, I drove into a biker. Get out of the car in shock. And this man is on the floor, is on the ground. I can tell he's in great pain. I go near him. He is screaming at me. "You were on the phone." And then in no time, there were other people who stopped to check what was going on. And I remember just at one point, I had a feeling that was running across my heart of fear. In that moment, I was thinking, oh, this is going to become racial. I look around. People here are black. It's me and the security guard. I offer to take the man to the hospital. He refuses. He's still screaming at me. An older white couple decides to take him to the nearest hospital. I wait for the police. Wait and wait. the end of the day. So I decide to go to the hospital. I get to casualty. He is with medical staff. I sit across him. He's laying down on a bed. I take a chair and sit right across him. And I maintain eye contact. He ignores me. And then at some point he says, "You don't need to be here. You can go where you need to go." My response to him is, "I want to be here and I'm really sorry." So I continue to just sit here. And then at some point I decide I have to go and report this to the police. As I'm about to leave, he says to me, "Tell them that you own a cell phone." I'm thinking, oh, interesting. I go and report the case. I come back to the hospital and he has been discharged. And apparently he suffered really serious injuries, a broken collarbone and a crushed ankle. Now, what do? I decide to go to a grocery store. I buy food, I buy flowers, I buy a bottle of red wine. I organize a script for strong painkillers, go to the pharmacy, I get the medication. Oh, only at that point that I realized, oh, I must have decided that I'm going to visit him at his house. He had given me an idea where he lives. So I drive there and then I get to the boom gate. And they call him, Nolisa is here, allows me in. And as I'm parking my car, he comes out. One of his arms is on a sling. And with his free arm, he hugs me and places a kiss on my cheek. And then I smile at him and I say, "Are we good?" He smiles. People come and visit and he introduces me as the one who drove into him. People are not sure how to respond to this. Cut long story short, about 2 weeks after that incident, it was Mr. Mandela's funeral. So I invited him. I'd been checking on him daily just to find out how he is. Most of that first week, he was in terrible pain. Couldn't even work, and this is a man who works for himself. So with Mr. Mandela's funeral, and we're watching it. I'm watching it with him from my home over a meal. We talk about South Africa, we talk about racism. And from that experience, I had an experience of what is it to be forgiven. I know what it is to be offered fearlessness. At a country level, we know the power of forgiveness through the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where people who had committed serious atrocities of harm, police, soldiers, other law enforcement officials had during the period just before the first elections in South Africa in 1994. Post the elections, TRC was instituted, and those perpetrators were brought together with their victims, had to tell the victims all they had done under the apartheid government. Intense, intense experience where the victim and the perpetrator are given an opportunity to find each other true forgiveness. I think that particular practice gave hope not only to us as South Africans, but to the world. When our problems are not over as a country by any long shot, much as we are led by a black government, we are stuck in material structures of white supremacy. The poor in South Africa has a black face. And there is corruption, ongoing corruption. But I know as South Africans, we do come together during times of crisis. So generosity is a foundation for practice of mindfulness and wisdom for liberation. I think we all have opportunities, especially in these times, the world is on fire in many ways. We have opportunity to cultivate generosity. I'm going to end this reflection with words from Ajahn Chah on virtue and morality. Virtue and morality are the mother and father of the Dharma growing within us. They provide it with the proper nourishment and guidance. So sustaining, deepening our cultivation of generosity is the way that we can support ourselves, each other, in this quest for freedom, freeing the heart from hate, greed, and delusion. Thank you. Grateful for this opportunity to share these beautiful teachings of the Buddha. So, Kevin and Mark, I am happy to take some questions based on this reflection on generosity.
So if anyone has anything that they'd like to ask Nolita, you can either raise your hand in Zoom or post your question in chat. And Nolita, maybe about 10 minutes of Q&A. That sounds okay. Okay, Jerry, you can go ahead and unmute yourself.
Hi, I'm Jerry Cragen in Toronto, a bit away from South Africa, but a country I do want to visit. So thank you very much. And I guess I was interested in your last words about virtue and morality and the interrelationship with that, with generosity. So recently I was in a situation where I'm a physician here, and the group that was negotiating a lease with the landlord, some of them had their income had gone down, and they wanna, and another problem was one of the people were leaving. And of course there's a COVID epidemic going on here as there is in the world, and it's difficult to find replacements. So they proceeded to write a letter to the landlord initially in a general way, wanting to get a reduction in the rent, and asking the landlord, you know, out of generosity. And the landlord wrote back saying that, well, because they had said that the one person isn't renewing and they're going to find it difficult to find a replacement for them, and that the people were working at home, albeit at a reduced capacity. Well, some it applied to, but it really didn't apply to others. And I resented, because I was signing the letter, that I didn't speak out, that it didn't apply to everyone. So I felt it misrepresented to some degree what had been said. And then the landlord wrote back and said, well, tell me how bad it is and give me a global estimate. So the letter never got to be written, but I was then pressured to indicate that, you know, they said, well, we'll put the specific numbers in about how much people had increases or decreases. And they then proposed a letter which was not accurate. And I said, look, I can't participate in this letter. Go ahead and send the letter on your own. And then they called me and said, listen, you know, and I was disgusted that they hadn't indicated the specific amounts, having said that they would, about how incomes went up and down in the letter. And so I had just listened to a Dharma talk here, in fact, at Redwood City and California via the wonders of the internet. And the person had said, you know, sometimes, why do we do mindfulness? We do mindfulness to develop an ethic so that we will speak the truth and avoid the defilements of greed and delusion and hate. And so anyway, they wanted to speak with me, and they started the conversation after some niceties, saying, look, you know, about the letter. And I said, look, I said I didn't want to participate. And then they said, come on, you don't, we can put the specific amounts, but you actually have to put this amount. And then I said, listen, you've lost your moral compass. This is disgusts me. And it is the letter, as originally composed, was dissembling. And so this, of course, I was speaking the truth, but I guess in retrospect, the letter never did get written, and the group disbanded and we're moving apart to with the peoples that were, there's a group of six and now there's four and two, which is fine. But I guess I wondered whether I should have related it more toward, in a generous way, look, I feel that it's, I would be immoral to sign the letter. I feel that this is dissembling. Instead, I projected it onto the other person. And I just wondered whether or not that is would have been a more generous approach. So I realize it's very specific and detailed, but it's the issue about in trying to be generous and also at the same time trying to be moral, getting caught in the approach that one might take to try to be generous, kind, but also ardent and courageous when you feel that a group is going awry. Sorry for the long.
What's the actual question? Summarize it for me. Make it specific.
So the specific question would be, would you just speak to yourself and not tell someone else that you've lost your moral compass, even though you feel that they did?
Are you saying is the feeling that you're acted in ways that were not ethical?
I felt that they did.
Oh, they did. Mm-hmm.
By not representing what they said they would, by putting the specific amounts in the letter and then calling me to now ask me to sign the letter, which I said I wouldn't. And then I basically very specifically named them. I said, "This, you've lost your moral compass. This letter is dissembling. And I'm disgusted with you."
So maybe another way that can help me to understand your question, how does it relate to this Buddhist teachings on training in morality?
Well, in the sense that the mindfulness helps you identify not getting caught up in greed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it did it. I felt that this was greed. Misrepresenting results that would, of course, not be helpful for them to say that, well, one person's income went up.
I don't have a wise response to this because it is not necessarily about your own experience of acting unethically. So I'm not sure. I'm a bit lost. I really don't have a wise answer to you because I'm not even sure that I'm understanding the question.
Well, I guess the question I'm trying to ask is, should you just direct it to yourself, or when you see unethical behavior in a group, should you identify that unethical behavior and name it, or just say, listen, for me to participate in this, it's unethical, rather than tell them that they are unethical to proceed with this approach, even if you believe it.
So, Jerry, do you appreciate that in the Buddhist teachings, this is training? So it is not about shoulds or shouldn't. Seen that way, it's not very helpful. So if it's training, it means all of us are going to fail, and we do fail to act ethically. And yes, you are right. The practice of mindfulness allows you to see that. It's hard to not see with a trained mind when you act in ways that are not ethical. And also, in this practice, you can always start again. It's not about punishment. It is about developing. It is about training. So let's leave it there. Let's leave it there, Jerry.
Thank you very much. It's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Mm.
Okay.
So I guess we have time for one more. So I think Miriam is next. So Miriam, if you want to go ahead and unmute yourself.
Kevin, it's okay. I see there are two. If
okay.
I can answer
both.
Yeah,
we'll take Miriam and Jeff. Okay. So Miriam, you're next. So go ahead.
I am unmuted now.
Yes.
Okay. Well, so Nolita, I want to thank you for your generosity for sharing all that. I'm from the Congo and I live in California. But I'm really emotional because this is the first time for me to hear someone from Africa doing Buddhist teaching. So I don't feel like alone. But and for me, my struggle about generosity, sometimes I feel like I'm not kind to myself when I'm not generous to other person, like when I'm specifically like I'm like I know some people like who are gay in my community, but I know in African culture that's not acceptable. And I really feel sometimes not generous when other people have strong idea like against that, but I don't accept them not being open-minded. And that's a struggle that I have. Yeah. And I don't know how to deal with that.
What is great, Miriam, is that you see what is going on, that you are struggling. So the encouragement would be to turn towards that experience of pain with kindness, with an attitude of openness and allowing. Because this practice of mindfulness is exactly about that. It is also about opening the heart towards ourselves and what we struggle with. That is what I would encourage you to do. Because rightly so, we are products of our cultures. Some of these beliefs are part of our psychology. What mindfulness can help us is to see which of these beliefs are beneficial and wholesome, and which are of these that are harmful not only to others, but also to ourselves. I would encourage you to really be gentle and kind to yourself in meeting with that pain. Okay.
Next is Jill. Jill, you can go ahead and unmute yourself.
Thank you very much for taking the question. I need to share that for a very long time, the concept of forgiveness, there seems to be a very strong divine element to it, something outside of just myself, and that if I had the power to forgive someone for a great harm, that it seems very, very bold and outside of my own entity. So my question is, am I misunderstanding the definition of this word forgiveness, or what do you think might be coming from my sense that it's the ability to forgive is outside of my power?
Jill, when you say it's outside of your power, what does that mean?
That it, when true harm is done, I would not understand the motivation of that other person or the deep reasons that it is beyond my not capacity, but that, and perhaps this is just because it's a leftover from training of another religion, which was very rooted in the concepts of guilt and only God has power to do things. So maybe that's a part of it, but even in my best of Buddhist moments and my best efforts to feel generosity, I know I can change my feelings in my heart about this person who has caused great harm, but I feel that the true washing away or something, so maybe it is a leftover religious thing, belongs to a power greater than mine.
So it sounds like you've answered your question there. So I'd encourage you to notice the experience of unforgiveness and open to that, allow that, be with the actual experience of unforgiveness. Not making it right or wrong, but just meeting it with openness. Stay with the sensations of the experience, not so much the thoughts, the stories. Stay with the felt sense of unforgiveness. So that's what I would advise as a practice, and really being gentle with yourself with that as well.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
No, Letha, there's a question in chat. I don't know if you have time for one more.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me take it, Kevin.
Yeah, so Cindy asks, Nolitha, how do you practice generosity in an environment of racism, white supremacy? It has been present in this country, the US, since its beginning, and it is very difficult, and it is a very difficult thing to forgive and understand.
I just noticed that in a moment, there isn't wisdom that's present for me in responding to that. But the fact that this person is thinking about forgiveness and just not knowing how is already a generous place to be. That there is a desire or a curiosity to what forgiveness might look like in that situation. Stay with the idea of being with the desire to forgive.